There it is, right where I put it. My sister's necklace, the one that tore off of my hand on the night I left her to die. Okay, we're good. I pushed myself to my feet, grabbed the rucksack from the floor and the rifle from the bed. Dumbo's watching me carefully, but I hardly notice. The kid's been mother-henning me for months now. I thought we were leaving tomorrow night, he says. If they aren't between here and the hotel, or where the hotel used to be, we'll have to cut through Urbana twice, I tell him, and I don't want to be anywhere near Urbana when the bastards go all Dubuque on it.
Dubuque?
The color drains out of his face.
Oh God, Dubuque again?
I drop the rucksack over one shoulder and the rifle over the other. Buzz Lightyear just told us they're blowing up the cities. That takes a second to sink in.
Which cities?
All of them. His jaw drops. He trails me into the hallway, then around the corner and into the kitchen. Bottled water, some unopened packages of beef jerky, crackers, a handful of protein bars. I divide the supplies between us. Gotta be quick before Nugget's radar goes off and he barrels out of that room to Velcro himself onto my leg.
All of them? Dumbo asks.
He frowns.
But Ringer said they weren't gonna blow up the cities.
Well, she was wrong. Or Walker's lying. Some bullshit about having to wait until the silencers were extracted. You know what I've decided, Private? I'm not wasting any more time worrying about all the things I don't know. He shakes his head. He still can't wrap his mind around it.
Every city on Earth?
Down to the last shitty one traffic light town.
How?
The mothership. In 4 days, one big swing around the planet, dropping the bombs as she goes. Unless Walker can blow up the ship before it happens. And I don't put a lot of faith in that.
Why?
Because I don't put a lot of faith in Walker.
I still don't get it, Zombie. Why'd they wait till now to start dropping bombs?
Every part of him is shaking, including his voice. He's losing it. I put my hands on his shoulders and force him to look at me. I told you, they're pulling out the silencers, sending down pods for every last infested one of them, except for handlers like Vosh. Once they've been evac'd and the cities are gone, there's no place for survivors to hide, making it a turkey shoot for the poor bastards they brainwashed into finishing the job. The fifth wave. Get it? He wags his head from side to side.
It don't matter. I go where you go, Sarge.
A shadow moves behind him. A damned nugget-shaped shadow. I took too long.
Zombie?
Okay, I sigh. Dumbo, give us a second. He leaves the kitchen with a single muttered word.
Dubuque.
Then there's just me and Nugget. I didn't want this, but you can't run from anything. Not really. It's all a circle. Ringer tried to tell me that. No matter how far or fast you run, sooner or later, you're back where you started. I got mad when Sullivan threw my sister up in my face, but we both knew she was right. Sissy was dead. Sissy would never die. I'm forever reaching for her. She's forever falling away. The silver chain breaking off in my hand. Where are Private's teacup and Ringer? I ask him. His freshly scrubbed face is lifted up to mine. He pooches out his lower lip. I don't know. Neither do I, so me and Dumbo are gonna find out.
I'm coming with you.
That's a negative, Private. I need you to watch your sister.
She doesn't need me. She has him.
I don't try to argue with that. He's too sharp for me to win. Well, I'm putting you in charge of Megan.
You said we weren't splitting up. You said no matter what.
I take a knee in front of him. His eyes shine with tears, but he isn't crying. He's a tough little son of a bitch, way older than his years. I'll only be gone a couple of days. Deja vu. Practically the same thing Ringer said before she left.
Promise?
And that was practically what I said back to her. Ringer didn't promise. She knew better. Me? I'm not that smart. Have I broken one yet? I take his hand, peel back his fingers, and press Sissy's locket into his palm. Hold on to this, I order him.
What is it?
Staring at the metal glittering in his hand. Part of the chain.
What chain?
The chain that holds it all together. He shakes his head, mystified. He isn't the only one. I have no clue what just came out of my mouth, what it means, or why I said it.
That cheap piece of costume jewelry? I thought I kept it out of guilt and shame, to remind myself of my failure, of all the things that had been ripped away. But maybe there's another reason, a reason I can't put into words, because I don't have the words for it. Maybe there aren't any. Chapter 9. He trails after me into the family room. "Ben, you haven't thought this through," Walker says. He's where I left him, standing by the front door. I ignore him. They're either at the caverns or they're not, I tell Sullivan, who's hugging herself beside the fireplace. If they are, we'll bring him back. If they aren't, we won't. "We've been holed up here for 6 weeks," Walker points out. "Under any other circumstance, we'd be dead. The only reason we aren't dead is because we neutralized the agent who patrolled this sector." "Grace," Cassie translates for me. "To get to the caverns, you'll have to cross through 3-2, Walker corrects her. She rolls her eyes. "Whatever. 2 territories patrolled by silencers just like him." She glances at Walker. "Or not just like him, not good silencers, really bad silencers who are really good at silencing." "You might get lucky and slip past one," Walker says. "Not 2. "But if you wait, there won't be any silencers to slip past." Cassie's beside me now, touching my arm, pleading. "All of them will be back on the mothership. Then Evan does his thing, and then you can..." Her voice trails off. She's run out of the breath necessary to blow smoke up my ass. I'm not looking at her. I'm looking at Walker. I know what he's going to say next. I know, because I'd say the same thing. If there's no way Dumbo and I can make it to the caverns, there's no way Ringer and Teacup could either. "You don't know Ringer," I tell him. "If anybody could have made it, she could." Walker nods, but he's agreeing with the first statement, not the second. After our awakening, we were enhanced with a technology that makes us nearly indestructible. We turned ourselves into killing machines, Ben. And then he takes a deep breath and finally spits it out, the obtuse bastard. "There's no way they could have survived this long. Not against us. Your friends are dead." I left anyway. Fuck it. Fuck him. Fuck everything. I've sat around long enough waiting for the world to end. Ringer hasn't kept her promise, so I'm keeping it for her.
Chapter 10. Ringer. Sentries are waiting for me at the gates. I'm escorted immediately to the watchtower overlooking the landing field, another circle completed, where Vosh waits for me, as if he hasn't moved from the spot in the last 40 days. "Zombie is alive," I said. I looked down and saw I was standing on the bloodstain that marked where Razor fell. A few feet away, beside the console, that's where Razor's bullet cut Teacup down. Teacup. Vosh shrugged. "Unknown." "Okay, maybe not zombie, but someone who knows me is still alive." He didn't answer. "It's probably Sullivan," I thought. "That would be just my luck. You know I can't get close to Walker without someone he trusts to vouch for me." He folded his long, powerful arms across his chest and peered down his nose at me, bright bird-like eyes glittering. "You never answered my question," he said. "Am I human?" I didn't hesitate. "Yes," he smiled. "And do you still believe that means there is no hope?" He didn't wait for an answer. "I am the hope of the world. The fate of humankind rests upon me." "What a terrible burden that must be," I said. "You are being facetious. They needed people like you. Organizers and managers who knew why they came and what they wanted." He was nodding. His face glowed. He was pleased with me, and pleased with himself for choosing me. "They had no choice, Marika. Which means, of course, that we had no choice. Under every likely scenario, we were doomed to destroy ourselves and our home. The only solution was radical intervention. Destroy the human village in order to save it. And it wasn't enough to kill 7 billion of us," I said. "Of course not. Otherwise, they would have thrown the big rock. No, the best solution is the child in the wheat. My stomach rolled at the memory. The toddler bursting through the dead grain. The little band of survivors taking him in. The last remnant of trust blown apart in a flash of hellish green light. On the day I met him, I got the speech. Every recruit did. The last battle of Earth will not happen on any plain or desert or mountaintop. I touched my chest. This is the battlefield. Yes. Otherwise, the cycle would merely repeat itself. And that's why Walker's important. The program embedded in him has fundamentally failed. We must understand why, for reasons that should be obvious to you. And there is only one way to accomplish that. He pressed a button on the console next to him. Behind me, a door opened and a middle-aged woman wearing lieutenant's bars on her collar stepped into the room. She was smiling. Her teeth were perfectly even and very large. Her eyes were gray. Her hair was sandy blonde and pulled back into a tight bun. I immediately disliked her. It was a visceral response. Lieutenant, escort Private Ringer to the infirmary for her pre-deployment checkup. I will see you in briefing room Bravo at 0400. He turned away. He was done with me. For now. In the elevator, the sandy-haired woman asked, "How are you feeling?" "Fuck off." Her smile persisted as if I'd answered, "Fine, and you?" "My name's Lieutenant Pierce, but call me Constance." The bell dinged. The doors slid open. She slammed her fist into my neck. My vision went black. My knees buckled. "That's for Claire," she said. "You remember her." I came up, driving the heel of my hand into her chin. The back of her head hit the wall with a satisfying crack. Then I punched her in the gut with all the force my enhanced muscles could muster. She collapsed at my feet. "That's for the 7 billion. You remember them." Chapter 11. In the infirmary, I was given a thorough physical. Diagnostics were run on the 12th system to ensure it was fully operational. Then an orderly brought in a tray groaning with food. I tore into it. I hadn't had a decent meal in over a month. When the plate was empty, the orderly came back carrying another. I knocked that off, too. They brought my old uniform. I stripped. I washed up the best I could in the sink. I could smell the stench of 40 unwashed days hovering around me, and for some reason I felt embarrassed. There was no toothbrush, so I rubbed my finger over my teeth. I wondered if the 12th system protected my enamel. I pulled on the clothes, laced the boots tight. I felt better. More like the old Ringer. The blissfully ignorant, naive, unenhanced Ringer who left Zombie that night with the unspoken promise, "I will come back. If I can, I will." The door swung open. Constance. She'd changed out of her lieutenant's uniform and into a pair of mom jeans and a tattered hoodie. "I feel like we started off on the wrong foot," she said. "Fuck off." "We're partners now," she said sweetly. "Buddies. We should get along." I followed her down 3 flights of stairs into the underground bunker, a snarl of gray-walled passageways pocked with unmarked doors under fluorescent lights that bled a constant, sterile glow, reminding me of the hours with Razor while my body fought its losing battle against the 12th system. Playing chase ball and creating secret codes and plotting the phony escape that would lead me back beneath this ghastly light. Another circle bound by uncertainty and fear. Constance was a half step in front of me. Our footfalls echoed in the empty space. I could hear her breathe. "It would be so easy to kill you right now," I thought idly, then pushed the thought away. That time would come, I hoped, but it wasn't now. She pushed open a door identical to the 50 or so other unmarked doors we'd passed, and I followed her into the conference room. A projection screen against one wall, a long table in front of the screen, a small metal box on the center of the table. Vosh was sitting behind the table. He stood up as we came in. The lights dimmed and the screen lit up with an aerial shot looking straight down at a two-lane road that cut through empty, rolling fields. In the center of the frame, the rectangular rooftop of a house. A solitary, shimmering dot on the left edge of the rectangle, the heat signature of someone on the watch. A cluster of glowing smudges inside the house. I counted them first, then gave them names. Dumbo, Poundcake, Sullivan, Nugget, Walker, and one more makes Zombie. Hello, Zombie.
From a reconnaissance flight 6 weeks ago, Vosh said, approximately 15 miles southeast of Urbana.
The video feed went black for an instant, then popped back on. Same thin black ribbon of the road, same dark rectangle of the house, but fewer glowing smudges inside it. Two were missing.
This is from last night.
The camera zoomed out. Woods, fields, more clusters of black rectangles, dark blotches against gray landscape, the world emptied, abandoned, lifeless. The thin black ribbon of road slid out of the shot. Then I saw them. Two glowing dots far to the northwest. Someone was on the move.
Where are they going?
I asked, but I was pretty sure I knew the answer already. Vosh shrugged.
Impossible to know for certain, but the most likely destination is here.
The image froze. He pointed to a spot at the top of the screen and gave me a knowing look. I closed my eyes. I saw a Zombie wearing that ugly yellow hoodie, leaning against the counter in the lobby of the old hotel, that stupid brochure clutched in his hands, and me saying, I'll scope it out and be back in a couple of days.
They're going to the caverns, I said, to look for me.
Yes, I think so,
Vosh agreed.
And that's exactly who they'll find.
The lights came up.
You'll be dropped in tonight, well ahead of their arrival. Lieutenant Pierce is tasked with target acquisition. Your only responsibility is getting her within striking distance. At the completion of the mission, Lieutenant Pierce and Walker will be extracted and returned to base.
Then what? I asked. He blinked slowly. He expected me to know.
And then you and your companions are free to go.
Go where? A small smile.
Wherever the wind might take you.
But I suggest you keep to open country. Urban areas won't be safe. He nodded to Constance, who brushed past me on her way to the door.
Take it, Cupcake. You'll want it.
I watched her leave.
Take it?
Take what?
Marika.
Vosh crooked his finger at me. Come here. I didn't move.
Why are you sending her with me?
Then I answered my own question.
You're not letting us go. Once you have Walker, you're going to kill us.
His eyebrow rose toward his crew cut.
Why would I kill you? The world would be a much less interesting place without you in it.
He looked away quickly, biting his lower lip, as if he'd said too much. He gestured toward the box sitting on the table.
We will not see each other again,
he said gruffly. I thought this was appropriate.
What?
A parting gift.
I don't want anything from you.
Not my first thought. My first thought was, stick it up your ass. He slid the box toward me. He was smiling. I lifted the lid. I wasn't sure what to expect.
Maybe a travel-sized chess set? A reminder of all the good times we had together.
Inside the box, nestled in a foam cushion, was a green capsule encased in clear plastic.
The world is a clock, he said softly, and the time is coming when the choice between life and death will not be a difficult one, Marika.
What is it?
The child in the wheat carried a modified version of this inside his throat, except this model is 6 times as powerful. Everything within a 5-mile radius is instantaneously vaporized. Place the capsule in your mouth, bite down to break the seal, and all you have to do is breathe.
I shook my head. I don't want it. He nodded. His eyes sparkled. He'd expected me to refuse.
In 4 days, our benefactors will release bombs from the mothership that will destroy every remaining city on Earth. Do you understand, Marika? The human footprint is about to be wiped clean. What we've built over 10 millennia will be gone in a day. Then the soldiers of the fifth wave will be unleashed upon the survivors and the war will begin. The last war, Marika. The endless war. The war that will go on and on until the final bullet is spent, and then it will be fought with sticks and rocks. My puzzled expression must have tried his patience. His voice went hard. What is the lesson of the child in the wheat?
No outsider can be trusted, I answered, staring at the green capsule in its bed of foam. Not even a child.
And what happens when no one can be trusted? What becomes of us when every stranger could be an other?
Without trust, there's no cooperation. And without cooperation, there's no progress. History stops.
Yes, he beamed with pride. I knew you would understand. The answer to the human problem is the death of what makes us human.
His arm came up, his hand toward me, as if he was going to touch me. And then he stopped himself. For the first time since I met him, he seemed troubled by something. If I hadn't known better, I'd have guessed he was afraid. But that would be ridiculous.
He dropped his hand to his side and turned away.
Chapter 12. The skin of the C-160 glistened in the light of the setting sun. It was freezing on the airstrip, but the sunlight flirted on my cheeks. 4 days until the spring equinox. 4 days until the mothership drops her payload. 4 days until the end. Beside me, Constance was running through one last check of her gear while the ground crew ran through one last check of the planes. I had my sidearm and rifle and knife, the clothes on my back, and the small green pill in my pocket. I'd accepted his final gift. I understood why he wanted me to have it, and I knew what the offer meant. He's going to keep his promise. Once Constance snatches Walker, we're free. What risk did we pose, really? There's nowhere to hide. Months may pass before we face the ultimate choice between death on their terms or death on ours. And when we're cornered or captured, out of all options except those two, I will have his gift. I will have that choice. I looked down at Constance fussing with her rucksack. The back of her exposed neck glowed golden in the failing light. I imagined taking my knife and plunging it to the hilt into the soft skin. Hate was not the answer, I knew that. She was as much a victim as me, as the 7 billion dead, as the child running through the sea of wheat. In fact, she and Walker and the thousands infected with the silencer program were the saddest, most pitiful victims of all. At least when I die, I'll do it with my eyes wide open. I'll die knowing the truth. She looked up at me. I wasn't sure, but I thought she was waiting for me to tell her to fuck off again. I didn't. Do you know him? I asked. Evan Walker. You must all know each other, right? You spent 10 millennia up there, with a tilt of my head toward the green smudge in the sky. Did you have any idea he'd go rogue? Constance bared her big teeth and didn't answer. Okay, that's bullshit. I said. Everything you think is the truth is bullshit. Who you think you are, your memories, all of it. Before you were born, they embedded a program in your brain that booted up when you hit puberty. Probably a chemical reaction kickstarted by the hormones. She nodded, still all teeth. I'm sure that's a comforting thought. You've been infected with a viral program that literally rewired your brain to remember things that didn't happen. You aren't an alien consciousness here to wipe out humanity and colonize the Earth. You're human, like me, like Vosh, like everyone else. She said, I'm not anything like you. You probably believe that at some point you'll return to the mothership and let the fifth wave finish the human genocide, but you won't, because they aren't going to do it.
You'll end up fighting the very army you've created until there are no bullets left and history stops. Trust leads to cooperation, leads to progress, and there'll be no more progress. Not a new Stone Age, a perpetual Stone Age.
Shouldering her rucksack, Constance rose from the tarmac.
That's a fascinating theory. I like it.
I sighed. There was no breaking through. I didn't blame her, though. If she told me, "Your father wasn't an artist and a drunk. He was a teetotaling Baptist minister," I wouldn't believe her. Cogito ergo sum. More than the sum of our experiences, our memories are the ultimate proof of reality. The plane's engines roared to life. I flinched at the sound. I spent 40 days in the wilderness without any reminders of the mechanized world. The smell of the exhaust rushing over me and the air vibrating against my skin brought on the ache of nostalgia in my heart. Because this, too, will end. The final battle hadn't started, but the war was already over. As if with a weary sigh, the sun dipped beneath the horizon. The green eye brightened against the darkening sky. Constance and I jogged up the platform into the plane and strapped in side by side. The door locked into place with a loud hiss. A second later, we were taxiing toward the runway. I looked over at Constance, her grin frozen in place and her dark eyes expressionless as a shark's. My hand shot out and grabbed her forearm, and I felt the hate boiling through the fabric of her heavy parka. The hate and rage and disgust cascaded from her into me, and I knew. Regardless of her orders and all of Vosh's promises, once she acquired the target and our usefulness was over, she would kill me and Zombie and everyone else. There was too much risk in letting us live. Which meant I had to kill her. The plane lurched forward. My stomach protested. A wave of nausea rolled over me. Weird. I'd never had motion sickness before. I leaned my back against the bulkhead and closed my eyes. The hub, answering my desire, shut down my hearing and tactile senses. In the gift of the numb silence that enfolded me, I worked through the options. Constance had to die, but killing Constance compounded the Evan problem. Vosh might dispatch a second operative, but he'll have lost all tactical advantage. If I kill Constance, he might decide to take us all out with a Hellfire missile. Unless he didn't need to kill Walker. Unless Walker was already dead. There was a sour taste in my mouth. I swallowed, fighting the urge to throw up. Vosh had to run Walker through Wonderland. It was the only way to know why Evan rebelled against his programming. If the flaw lay in Walker or in the program or in some toxic combination of the two. A fundamental flaw in the program would create an unsustainable paradigm. But if Walker was dead, Vosh couldn't identify the flaw in the system, and the whole operation could collapse. You can't have a war, especially of the endless variety, if everyone's on the same side. Whatever went wrong in Walker could go wrong in the other silencers. He had to know why Evan's programming failed. I can't let it happen. I can't risk giving Vosh what he wants. Denying him what he wanted might be the only hope we had left, and there was only one way to do that. Evan Walker had to die.
Chapter 13. Sam. Zombie on the road, shrinking. Zombie and Dumbo walking down the empty road awash in starlight, fading. Sam pulls the silver chain from his pocket and holds it tightly in his hand. Promise? Have I broken one yet? And the dark closing around Zombie like a monster's mouth, until there is no Zombie, only the monster, only the dark. He presses his other hand against the cold glass. On the day the bus took him to Camp Haven, he watched Cassie on the brown road, holding Bear, shrinking away to nothing, swallowed by the dust. Like Zombie was swallowed by the dark. Behind him, Cassie says to Evan Walker in her angry voice, "Why didn't you stop him?" "I tried," Evan Walker answers. "Not very hard." Short of breaking his legs, I don't know what I could have done. When Sam takes his hand away, the glass holds the memory of it, like the bus window once did, a misty imprint of where his hand had been. After you lost Sam, could anyone have stopped you from finding him? Evan Walker asks. Then he goes outside. Sam can see his sister's face reflected in the glass. Like everything else since they came, Cassie's changed. She's not the same Cassie shrinking on the dusty road. Her nose is kind of crooked, like the nose of someone pressing her face against a window pane. Sam, she says, it's late. What do you say? Want to sleep in my room tonight? He shakes his head. I have to watch Megan. Zombie's orders. She starts to say something. Then she stops. Then she says, okay, I'll be there in a minute to say your prayers with you. I'm not going to pray. Sam, you have to pray. I prayed for Mommy and she died. I prayed for Daddy and he died too. When you pray for people, they die. That isn't why they died, Sam. She reaches for him. He pulls away. I'm not going to pray for anybody anymore, he tells her. In the bedroom, Megan sits on the bed, holding Bear. Zombie left, Sam tells her. Where'd he go? She whispers. A whisper is as loud as her voice goes. Cassie and Evan Walker hurt something in her throat when they pulled out the pill bomb. He's going on recon to find Ringer and Teacup. Megan shakes her head. She doesn't know who Ringer and Teacup are. Her hand squeezes Bear's head and Bear's mouth puckers like he wants a kiss. Be careful, Sam says. Don't hurt his head. The window in his bedroom is boarded up. You can't see outside. At night, after you turn off the lamp, the dark is so heavy, you can feel it pressing against your skin all over. Dangling from the ceiling are loose wires and a couple of balls that Zombie said were supposed to be Jupiter and Neptune. This is the room where Evan Walker tried to kill the evil Grace Lady with wire from the mobile. There are bloodstains on the carpet and splatters of blood on the walls. It's like his mother's bedroom after she got the Red Death and her nose wouldn't stop bleeding. She bled from her nose and her mouth, and near the end, blood came out of her eyes and even her ears. Sam remembers her blood. He can't remember her face. I thought we were all staying here until Evan blew up the ship, Megan whispers, squeezing Bear. Sam opens the closet door. Besides clothes and shoes that smell faintly of the plague, there are board games and action figures, and a big Hot Wheels collection. One day, Cassie came into the room and saw him on the floor playing with the dead kid's stuff. She watched him sitting on the big blood stain in the middle of the floor. He'd made a camp, and there was his old squad, Squad 53, and they had a jeep and a plane, and they were on a mission to infiltrate an infested stronghold. Only the infested saw them coming, and their drones dropped bombs, and everybody was hurt except Sam. And Zombie told him, it's up to you now, Private. You're the only one who can save us. His sister watched him play for a few minutes, and then she started to cry for no reason, and that made him mad. He didn't know she was watching. He didn't understand why she was crying. He felt embarrassed. He was a soldier now, not a baby who played with toys. He stopped playing after that. He hesitates before stepping into the closet. Megan is watching him from the bed. She doesn't know about his secret. Nobody does. But Zombie gave him an order, and he has to follow it. Zombie is his commanding officer.
If he blows up the ship, how does he keep from blowing himself up too? She asks.
Sam looks over his shoulder at her before stepping into the closet. I hope he does, he says. Zombie said he didn't trust Evan Walker. He was an infested, and it didn't matter that he'd been helping them. The enemy was the enemy was the enemy, and you can't trust traitors, Zombie said. Cassie said Evan Walker wasn't her boyfriend, but Sam saw the way she looked at him and heard the way she talked to him, and he didn't believe her when she said they could trust him or that he would make everything okay. He had trusted the soldiers at Camp Haven, too, and they turned out to be the enemy. Inside the closet, he kneels beside the heap of clothes piled against one wall. Nobody knows what he hid there, not even Zombie. When they first got to the house, they checked out every room until only the basement was left, and Zombie wouldn't let him go down there. Zombie went down with Dumbo and Evan Walker, And when they came up again, they were carrying weapons. Rifles and pistols and explosives. And a very big tube-shaped gun with a shoulder mount that Zombie called a Fimstinger. You could blow up helicopters and planes with it, Zombie explained. Blow them right out of the sky. Then he told Sam the basement was unauthorized. Sam wasn't allowed to go down there or touch any of the weapons. Even though he was a soldier, just like Dumbo and just like Zombie. It wasn't fair. Sam reaches behind the mound of clothes and pulls out the gun. An M9 Beretta. So cool. What are you doing in there? Megan asks, plucking at Bear's ear. She shouldn't do that. He told her not to 1,000 times. Dumbo's had to sew up Bear's ear twice since they came to the house. He let Megan keep Bear, even though Bear has always been his for as long as he can remember, even though she squishes his head and plucks at his ears and calls him a different name. They got in a fight about it. His name is Bear, Sam told her that day.
That's not a name. A bear is what he is. I named him Captain.
You can't do that. She shrugged.
I did.
He's mine.
Then take him back, she said. I don't care.
He shook his head. He didn't want Bear back. He wasn't a baby anymore. He was a soldier. All he wanted was for her to call Bear by his right name.
You used to be Sam, and now you have a different name, Megan said.
That's not the same. Bear's not part of the squad. She didn't stop. Once she found out he hated the name, she called Bear Captain all the time, just to bug him. Keeping his back to Megan, he jams the gun into his waistband and pulls the big red sweatshirt over his stomach to hide the bulge.
Sam, Captain wants to know what you're doing in there.
He asked Zombie that night if he could have one of the guns. There were dozens of them. A freaking armory down there, Zombie said. But he also said no. Cassie was standing there, so Sam waited until she was out of the room and asked Zombie again if he could have a gun. It wasn't right that everybody carried one except him and Megan, but she didn't count. She was a civilian. She hadn't been trained like he had. They had taken her from the bus and hidden her until it was time to plant the pill bomb in her throat. She wasn't alone, she said. There were a lot of kids they pulled from the buses. Hundreds of children. And Evan Walker said each of them was used to trick survivors. The children were airlifted or driven to places where the enemy knew people were hiding. The people brought in the children to save them. Then the people died.
And Cassie said they had to trust Evan Walker?
The gun under his shirt is cold against his bare skin. It's a nice feeling. Better than a hug. He isn't afraid of the gun. He isn't afraid of anything. His orders are to watch Megan, but Zombie left nobody in charge of watching Evan Walker. So Sam will do that too. At Camp Haven, the soldiers in charge said they would protect him. They told him he was perfectly safe. They told him everything was going to be all right. And they lied. They lied about everything because everybody is a liar. They make promises they don't keep. Even his mommy and daddy lied. When the mothership came, they said they would never leave him. And they did. They promised everything would be all right. And it wasn't. He crawls into the bed opposite Megan's and stares at the bare wires and the two dusty metal balls hanging from the ceiling. Megan is watching him, pulling Bear tight against her chest, and her mouth hangs open a little, like the air is running out. He turns his head toward the wall. He doesn't want Megan to see him cry. He isn't a baby. He's a soldier. There's no way you can tell who's human anymore. Evan Walker looked human, but he wasn't. Not inside. Not where it matters. Even people like Megan, who are human, maybe, couldn't be trusted because you can't know what the enemy has done to them. Zombie, Cassie, Dumbo. You can't really trust them either. They could be just like Evan Walker. In the pressing dark beneath the broken mobile, Sam's heart speeds up. Maybe they're all tricking him. Even Zombie. Even Cassie. His breath catches in his throat. It's hard to breathe. You have to pray, Cassie said. He used to pray every night, all the time, and the only answer God ever gave was no. Let mommy live, God. No. Let daddy come back, God. No.
You can't trust God either. Even God is a liar. He put rainbows in the sky as a promise he'd never kill everyone again, and then he let the others come and do it. All the people who died must have prayed too, and God said no, 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 7 billion times. 7 billion no's, God said no, no, no. The cool metal of the gun against his bare skin. The cold like a hand against his forehead, pressing. Megan breathing through her mouth, reminding him of bombs triggered by human breath. They won't stop, he thinks. They'll never stop until everyone is dead. God let it happen because God wants it to happen. And nobody can win against God. He's God. Megan's breathing fades away. Sam's tears dry. He floats in a vast, empty space. There's nothing and no one. Just empty space that goes on and on and on. Maybe that's it, he thinks. Maybe there's already nobody human left. Maybe they're all infested. Which means he's the last one. He's the last human on Earth. Sam presses his hands against the pistol. Touching the gun comforts him. Megan has Bear. He has the gun. If it is a trick, if they're all aliens in disguise, he won't let them win. He'll kill them all if he has to. Then he'll ride the rescue pod up to the mothership and blow it up. They'll lose. The last human will die, but at least the others won't win. God said no. He can too. 2. The second day. Chapter 14. Zombie. It takes less than an hour to reach the city limits sign. Urbana, dead ahead. Literally. I pull Dumbo off the road before we go in. I've been debating with myself whether to tell him, but there's really no choice. He needs to know. You know what Walker is, I whisper. He nods. His eyes dart left, right, then back to my face. He's a freaking alien. That's right. It was downloaded into Walker's body when he was a kid. You've got some, like Vosh, running the camps, and then you've got others, like Walker, lone operatives who patrol assigned territories, picking off survivors. Dumbo's eyes leave my face to confront the dark again. Snipers? We're gonna be passing through two of those territories. One that runs between Urbana and the caverns, and one that begins on the other side of this sign. He wipes the back of his hand across his mouth. He tugs on an earlobe. Okay. And they're loaded for Bear. I don't know, some kind of technology that jacks them up, gives them super strength, speed, senses, that kind of thing. We go quick, and we go quiet. I lean toward him. Important he understands. If something happens to me, you abort this mission. Get back to the safe house. He's shaking his head. I won't leave you, Sarge. Yes, you will, and that's an order, Private, in case you're wondering. Would you leave me? You bet your ass I would. I pat him on the shoulder. He watches silently as I dig the eyepiece out of my rucksack and slip it on. His head lights up through the lens, a bright ball of green fire. I survey our surroundings for any other telltale green blobs while he puts on his own eyepiece. One last thing, Bo, I whisper. There are no friendlies. Sarge? I swallow. My mouth is dry. I wish there were another way. It makes me sick, but I didn't invent this game. I'm just trying to stay alive long enough to play. Unclean glows green. Anything that lights up, we take out. No hesitation, no exceptions. Understand? That won't work, zombie. What if it's ringer or teacup? Damn, hadn't thought of that. I also hadn't thought through ringer's options, which were identical to mine. Shoot first and ask questions later, or fire only if fired upon. I think I know which she'd choose. She's ringer. A little voice in my head whispers, two of you double the risk. Send Dumbo back. The cool, quiet voice of reason, which has sounded a lot like Ringer's ever since I met her. Points you just can't argue with, like somebody telling you that granite is hard and water is wet. Dumbo is shaking his head. We've been through the shit together, He knows me. Two sets of eyes are better than one, Sarge. We go like you said, quick and quiet, and hopefully we see them before they see us. He gives me what I guess is supposed to be a reassuring smile. I return what I hope passes for a confident nod. Then we go. Double timing straight up Main, into the burned out, debris-strewn, rat-infested, boarded-up, graffiti-decorated, sewage-stained guts of Urbana. Overturned cars and downed power lines and trash piled against foundations by wind and water. Trash blanketing yards and parking lots. Trash hanging from the winter bare tree limbs. Plastic bags and newspapers, clothing, shoes, toys, broken chairs and mattresses, TVs. It's like a cosmic giant grabbed the planet with both hands and shook it as hard as he could. Maybe if I were some evil alien overlord, I'd blow up all the cities too, just to get rid of the mess. We probably should have swung around this hellscape, used the back roads and open country. I'm certain Ringer would have. But if she and Cup are going to be anywhere, it's the caverns, and this is the shortest route. Quick and quiet, I'm thinking as we trot down the sidewalk, our eyes cutting left to right and back again. Quick and quiet. Four blocks in, we come to a 6-foot-high barricade blocking off the street. A jumble of cars and tree branches and smashed furniture festooned in faded American flags. I'm guessing thrown together as the second wave bled into the third, when it dawned on people that our fellow humans were a bigger threat than the alien spaceship that soared 200 miles overhead. It blows your mind how quickly we slid into anarchy after they pulled the plug. How easy it was to sow confusion and fear and distrust. And how goddamn fast we fell. You'd think a common enemy would have forced us to set aside our differences and band together against the escalating threat. Instead, we built barricades. We hoarded food and supplies and weapons. We turned away the stranger, the outsider, the unrecognized face. 2 weeks into the invasion, and civilization had already cracked at its foundation. 2 months, and it collapsed like an imploding building, falling down as the bodies piled up. We've seen a few of those, too, on our way into Urbana. From piles of blackened bones to corpses wrapped head to toe in tattered sheets and old blankets, just lying there in the open like they'd dropped from the sky, alone or in groups of 10 or more. So many bodies that they faded into the background. Just another part of the mess, another piece of the urban vomit. Dumbo's eyes swing back and forth restlessly, searching the dark for green fireballs. Messed up, he breathes. Despite the cold, sweat shines on his forehead. He shivers as if gripped by a fever. On the other side of the barricade, I call a break. Water, a power bar. I've developed this thing about power bars. Found a whole case of them in the safe house, and now I can't get enough of them. We find a small gap in the makeshift wall and nestle inside, facing north down Main Street. There's no wind. The sky is clear, stuffed with stars. You can feel it deep in your bones because it's older than your senses. The end of winter. The earth sliding towards spring. Before I became zombie, that meant prom and cramming for finals and the nervous chatter in the hallways between classes because graduation was coming. A different kind of apocalyptic event, after which nothing would ever be the same. You ever been to Urbana, Dumbo? I ask. He shakes his head. I'm from Pittsburgh. Really? I'd never asked. It was the unwritten rule in camp. Talking about our past was like handling hot coals. Well, go Steelers. Nah. He bites off a hunk of power bar and chews slowly. I was a Packers fan. I played some, you know. Quarterback? Wide receiver. My brother played baseball, shortstop. Not you? I quit Little League when I was 10. How come? I sucked, but I kill at esports. Esports? You know, like COD? Competitive fishing? He shakes his head with a smile. No, Call of Duty, zombie. Oh, you're a gamer. I was borderline MLG. Oh, MLG, right. I don't have the first clue what he's talking about. Max level, prestige 12. Wow, really? I shake my head, thoroughly impressed, except I'm totally lost. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
He crumples the wrapper in his fist. He glances around at the garbage littering every square inch of Urbana, then slips the wrapper into his pocket. There's something that's been bugging me, Sarge. He turns to me. His exposed eye is wide with anxiety. So, way before their ship showed up, they downloaded themselves into babies and didn't wake up inside them until they were teenagers? I nod. That's what Walker said. My birthday was last week. I'm 13. For real? Damn it, Dumbo, why didn't you tell me? I would have baked you a cake. He doesn't smile. What if I got one inside me, Sarge? What if one of them is about to wake up in my brain and take over? You're not serious, right? Come on, Private, that's crazy talk. How do you know? I mean, how do you know, Zombie? And then it happens and I waste you, and I go back to the house and waste all of them. He's losing it. I grab his arm and make him look at me. Listen to me, you big-eared son of a bitch. You go Dorothy on me now, and I'm gonna kick your ass from here to Dubuque. Please, he whines. Please stop bringing up Dubuque. There's no alien asleep inside you, Dumbo. Okay, but if you're wrong, you'll take care of it, right? I know what he means, but I go, huh? Take care of it, Zombie. Pleading with me. Kill the motherfucker. Well, happy freaking birthday, Dumbo. This conversation has given me the heebie-jeebies. It's a deal, I tell him. An alien wakes up inside you, I'll blow your brains out. Relieved, he sighs. Thanks, Sarge. I stand up, hold out my hand, and help him to his feet. His arm swings around and shoves me to one side. His rifle comes up. He's aiming at the car dealership half a block down. I lift my weapon, close my right eye, and squint through the eyepiece. Nothing. Dumbo shakes his head. Thought I saw something, he whispers. Guess not. We hold for a minute. It's so damn quiet. You'd think the town would be overrun with packs of wild dogs barking and feral cats howling or even a damn owl hooting. But there's nothing. Is it all in my head, this feeling of being watched? That there's something out there I can't see but can sure as hell see me? I glance at Dumbo, who's clearly just as spooked. We move out. Not on the quick now, but sidestepping to the opposite side of the street, where we slide along the wall of the consignment store facing the dealership. Spring into savings this Memorial Day. We don't stop until we reach the next intersection. Check right, check left, then straight ahead toward downtown, three blocks away. The building's big boxy shadows silhouetted against the starry sky. We trot across the intersection, then stop again on the other side, pressing our backs against the wall and waiting. For what? I'm not sure. We scoot past busted out doors and shattered windows. The sound of glass crunching under our boots, louder than sonic booms. Another block, then repeating the drill. Left around the corner, right across Main. Then zipping to the relative safety of the next building on the opposite corner. We make it another 50 yards, and then Dumbo tugs on my sleeve, leading me through a broken glass door and into the near dark of a shop. Brown pebbles crunch underfoot. No, not pebbles. The smell is faint, barely discernible beneath the familiar rot of sewage and the spoiled milk odor of plague, but we both picked it up, and there's a little ache of nostalgia when we do. Coffee. Dumbo eases down in front of the counter, facing the doorway, and I give him a look. What's up? I loved Starbucks, he sighs. Like that makes everything perfectly clear. I sit beside him. I don't know, maybe he needs a break. We don't talk. The minutes drag out. Finally, I say, we gotta be the hell out of this town by sunrise. Dumbo nods. He doesn't move. There's someone out there, he says. You saw them? He shakes his head. But I feel them, you know? I feel them. I think about it. Paranoia has to be. We could try to draw their fire, I suggest, humoring him. Or distract them, he says, glancing around the store. Blow something up? He rummages through his sack and pulls out a grenade. No, Dumbo, not a good idea. I ease the grenade from his hand. His fingers are colder than the metal.
They're gonna slide in behind us, he argues. We won't even see it coming. Well, I'd rather not see it coming, I smile at him. He doesn't smile back. Dumbo's always been the coolest player on the team, probably why they picked him to be the medic. Nothing fazed the kid. At least, nothing until now. Sarge, I got an idea, he says, leaning so close I can smell the chocolate from the power bar on his breath. You stay here, I go on ahead, but in a different direction. Once I draw them off, you can haul ass due north and... I stop him. That's a terrible idea, Private. A really, really terrible idea. He isn't listening. That way, at least one of us makes it. Stow that shit, we're both gonna make it. Shaking his head, his voice breaks. I don't think so, Sarge. He rips off his eyepiece and stares at me for one very long, very uncomfortable moment. He looks startled, as if he's seen a ghost. Then Dumbo lunges at me, rising to his feet and coming straight at me with hands outstretched, like he's gonna grab me by the throat and choke the life out of me. I raise my own hands instinctively to block the attack. Oh Christ, the big-eared son of a bitch was right, it woke up. The thing woke up in him. My fingers catch hold of his jacket. Dumbo's head snaps back, his body stiffens, then goes limp. I hear the report of the sniper rifle a second later, the kind of rifle with a laser-guided scope, which fired the bullet that a second before was coming straight at my head. The bullet that Dumbo took from me, accepted without hesitation, because I'm the man, the CO, the thick-headed moron that the enemy in all his infinite wisdom put in charge of keeping our asses alive. Chapter 15. I grab him by the shoulders and drag him behind the counter. Out of the line of fire, but also cornered. I don't have much time. I put him on his stomach, yank up the jacket and the two shirts underneath to expose the wound. A quarter-sized hole right in the middle of his back. The bullet has to be inside him, otherwise I'd be hit too. His chest moves, he's breathing. I lean down and whisper in his ear, tell me what to do, Dumbo, tell me. He doesn't say anything. Probably needs all his energy just to breathe. Zombie, you can't stay here. That calm, ringerish voice again. Cut him loose. Sure, cut him loose. That's my thing. That's how I roll. I cut my sister loose. I cut Pound Cake loose. They go down and I keep going. Fuck that. I crawl around to the front of the counter, grab Dumbo's bag and go back to him. He's curled into a ball, knees pressed against his chest, and his eyelids flutter like someone having a bad dream. I tear through his med kit looking for the gauze. I have to pack the wound. I remember that much from my one and only course in battlefield injuries at Camp Haven. If I don't pack it, and pack it fast, he could bleed out in less than 3 minutes. The other thing I remember from that course, it hurts like hell. Hurts so goddamn bad, the first thing you're supposed to do is take away the patient's weapons. So I pull his sidearm from the holster and tuck it behind my back. There should be a thin metal rod in the kit. You use it to push the gauze into the wound, but I can't find it. Bug out, zombie, you're out of time. I push the gauze into the hole in his back with my finger. Dumbo bows up, he screams. Then he instinctively tries to escape, clawing at the base of the counter for a handhold, and I wrap the fingers of my free hand around his neck to keep him still. It's good, Bo, it's all good. Whispering in his ear as my finger sinks inside him, pushing the wad of gauze ahead of it. More gauze, gotta pack it tight. If that bullet sliced an artery. I pull my finger out. He lets loose another banshee howl, and I cup his chin, forcing his mouth closed. I don't move slow. I don't go gentle. I ram another wad into the wound. Dumbo is jerking against me, sobbing helplessly. I lie on my side behind him and throw my leg over his waist to keep him still. One more time, Bo, I whisper. Almost there. Then it's done. The gauze pokes out of the wound. I can't push any more inside. I tear open a bandage with my teeth and slap it over my handiwork. I roll onto my back, pulling hard for air. Probably too little, too late. Beside me, Dumbo continues to cry, the sobs dwindling to whimpers. His body shudders against mine. He's going into shock. Back to the bag to find something for the pain. He's on his way out. He's dying, I'm pretty sure of that. But at least I can help him go easy. I tear open a morphine syringe and jab the needle into his exposed hip. The effect is almost immediate. His muscles relax. His mouth goes slack. His breathing slows. See? Not so bad, I tell him, like I'm settling an argument. I'm coming back for you, Bo. I'm finding the bastard, and then I'm coming back. Oh boy, zombie. You've done it now. The promise feels like a death sentence, a cell door slamming shut, a stone around my neck that's destined to carry me down. Chapter 16. Back around the counter to fetch my rifle. Rifle, sidearm, knife, a couple of flash grenades. And one more thing, the most essential weapon in my arsenal, a heart full of rage. I'm blowing the bastard who shot him back to Dumbo's favorite town. Scooting on my hands and knees down the hallway to the emergency exit door. Warning, alarm will sound. Onto the side street beneath the cold starlight. I'm alone for the first time since my family's murder. Not running away this time, though. No more of that. I head east. At the next block, I turn north again, paralleling Main Street. I'll cut back after a couple more blocks, cross Main to the next street, then come at the shooter from the rear, assuming he hasn't already crossed the street to finish the job. Might not be the silencer. Could be a civilian who's learned the first lesson of the last war. Not that it makes any difference. Back at the safe house, Cassie told me about finding a soldier inside a convenience store while she was foraging for supplies. She killed